back on the Rule of Three, two comics, three topics, 10 minutes each. The perfect podcast for your modern lifestyle. We're going to be talking a little bit later. We actually got two pop culture items, one music, one comedy. We're going to be talking about Clint Eastwood. Made a comment about the state of comedy, strangely enough. And of course, as always, when a pop culture icon passes into the onto the next stage, we're going to be talking about Soundgarden later in the show.
Not all of Soundgarden, luckily, just Chris Cornell. That would be a real tragedy if somehow,
yeah,
in separate incidents, the scattered to the wind members of Soundgarden all simultaneously perished.
Yeah, just Chris Cornell.
but a pretty important member of Soundgarden.
But the first topic that we're going to be dealing with is, how did you spend your weekend? What'd you do, Brian?
I have a good answer to this, kind of ish. Went to my brother-in-law graduated from college, so I went to his college graduation, which was, I will say, it was a technical school, but for like computer skills and stuff, you know, for web design and computer engineering, and
sure,
and it's a very practical, very good school. I love their graduation. Super practical. It was like a graduation run by engineers instead of liberal arts majors. So it was like, all right, well, everybody get up there, and then I'll say a quick thing, and then this guy will say a thing, and then we'll start reading the names, and we'll get the hell out of here. You know? it was awesome.
Yeah, there was a flow.
It was like
there
an was, hour there was, and 20
it was put
minutes.
Up on a flow chart on a whiteboard. So
it was like, oh, because I'm used to, you know, I went to liberal arts school, and so it was like our graduation was like 5.5 hours long, and everybody had to give a speech.
Heavy, these guys heavy on like, the well, pump. We got a heavy system. On the pump, light on the circumstance.
Yes. Yes, this was all circumstance, no pomp, just an appropriate amount of pomp. I thumbs up to the fine Dunwoody School for their crisply run graduation. I can only assume their graduates are going to be pretty on the ball too.
Oh, cool. I've been working on my car all weekend. Well, not all weekend. That's not really true. Mm-hmm. I rented a car on Friday with the assumption that I would be working on the car all weekend. But as I want to do, I goofed off Friday and Saturday and half the day Sunday.
Boy, you really put that off.
Yeah. The car's due back at 4 o'clock today, and my car's still up on jacks. So don't know if you know this, outside of the summer, Enterprise Rent-A-Car has a $9.99 a day special. So it's $30. You get a brand new car for the weekend.
Huh.
So that's nice. That's what I did. I've been enjoying it. It's a Toyota Corolla, and it's got a backup camera, which I'm used to older cars. So the backup camera for me is a real neat thing. I actually went around the block backwards.
I don't know if that's why they invented that.
No, but that's the danger of putting geeky toys when there's people like me around.
That's true. That's why they could never actually put an ejector seat in a car. You would just have to try it for fun once.
That's why it's why I don't own guns. I'm very pro Second Amendment, but I am not able. I do not have the patience with toys. I wish I could trust myself not to, after a couple beers, pull it out and put a couple rounds into the garden. Or maybe maybe try to
– let's see if we can grow some bullets.
Maybe try to take out that squirrel.
Yeah. I mean, Chekhov has a whole saying about this, you know, so I'm inclined to believe him.
Yeah. So that's I've been working on cars the better part of my life. I think the first
– Or waiting to work on cars.
Or putting it off. Yes. It's probably – I think I was probably about 18 when I first – when I picked up my first wrench and crawled under a car and started taking something off and putting it on. It's been a fascination with me ever since.
And when that guy got back from the store, he was furious.
Well, interesting story. Interesting story. I learned cars with a VW Beetle. That was my first car. And
okay.
And those are essentially expressway legal go-karts.
Those are real, from what I understand, I've looked under one of those a little bit, real, and there's so little to them. They're very intuitive.
Yeah.
Yeah, the engine.
It's like a lawnmower.
The engine, like a big lawnmower. The engine is bolted onto the transmission with four bolts. That's it. Four bolts. So I set a record once. I think it was like 5 minutes from shutting off the car to having the engine on the ground. It's wow. It's a bunch of wires, a fuel line, some shrouding, and four bolts. I mean, there's really nothing to. Oh, and the accelerator cable, the thing that pulls the throttle. That's it. And I was talking to a friend of mine. And he goes, oh yeah. He goes. Growing up, he goes, we used to they blow the engines blow all the time. If you have a VW, you have to rebuild the engine about every 20,000 miles with those old air cooled VWs. But what he told me, he said it was never a problem for him because him and his buddies would go out in the middle of the night. And somebody would wake up and it's like my engine's gone.
I mean, the danger of something so easily disassembled.
Yeah, as it were. Yeah, absolutely. It's it's an advantage, and I think it's because it was kind of like it was made with World War II in mind. That I have done like major repairs on the side of the road. Because you know stuff that you wouldn't think. I've taken the engine out on the side of the road and replaced a clutch.
Wow,
it's stuff you wouldn't think of doing with today's newer cars. But
and to that point, working on cars in general is a thing that today is often very difficult with the computerization and everything. I mean, they're not made to be worked on by the average person for the most part.
Nothing is. It's a talent. Everything's disposable.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the things. I have all these talents that were really crucial when I started in comedy that are completely useless. Fixing electronics is one of them. Car repair is another. Reading a map is another one. It's just useless talents that are no longer necessary in comedy today. But in cars, yeah, they're so dang reliable. There's really very little that goes wrong with a car. I had a buddy that was a mechanic, and he was bemoaning the fact of how reliable cars are today. Pretty much all he would do is air conditioner repair and batteries.
Sure.
Tires.
Yeah.
That's pretty much all you do on a car nowadays. It's the computer. Everything's done by computer, and not forgetting the danger of an EMF bomb, they'll run almost forever. And whereas before when it was all mechanical, there nothing would happen. But now, if something goes wrong, the car actually knows what went wrong and can adjust it so it keeps running. It lights the check engine light and compensates. So it's
wow.
But when I was in my 20s, it was much easier. It was much easier to crawl up and down because you think about it, you go under the car and you put on a part and then you have to sit up. That is actually a sit up. I do.
Yeah. I do that. No, absolutely.
I realize when I do that how rarely I do sit ups. And then, I'm doing suspension work. So I'm actually under the car, which as an immortal youth never bothered me. Now in my golden years, I really don't like crawling underneath a car on jack stands anymore. I actually have two or three friends whose father perished in that exact fashion.
Yeah.
And so
yeah, that was a not unpopular way to go.
It's
I mean, if you think about it, more people than people, people think of all these ways that you're going to die, and it's like, oh, you'll probably fall off a ladder, taking leaves out of your gutter. Tons of people die just falling off a stupid ladder on their second story.
Uh-huh.
Or just getting ice off the roof in Minnesota. That's a big one.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like these obvious, it's like you go about your life and you're pretty safe and careful and you're bolted in, and then every now and then you're like, oh, I'm just going to climb up on this slippery roof, or I'm just going to climb underneath this car that's held up by some stuff I just rigged.
a cinder block and a cinder block.
Yeah, what
and
could
a coat
go wrong?
Hanger. And so anyway, so right now it's I'm still a car still on the jacks. I need to get a part. So fortunately, I have a spare car to get to the part store. Do not know
what's the part, by the way.
The part I need is a suspension link rod.
Oh, that sounds fake.
The part I replaced is a bushing. It's a sway bar bushing. It's but the brake job went relatively easily. I mean, there's a brand new brake rotor sitting on that wheel, and so hopefully by 4 o'clock I'll have a working car, and we could talk about more in the next segment.
Sticky nickels in my Vans cup holder. Sticky nickels make me think of that girl. Sticky nickels in the car I sold her. Stuck to the floor by the syrup from the soda. We all lie in the summertime. Say our lives look super fine. Waste our time just to stand in line. Spend our time trying to blow our minds away.
And on the second segment of Rule of Three, what are we talking about in the third segment, by the way, Tim?
We're going to be talking about Clint Eastwood's sense of humor.
Right! Clint Eastwood's sense of humor. But before we get to the hilarity that is Clint Eastwood, sad story. Chris Cornell last week passed away, lead singer of Soundgarden. Interesting. I just saw on the Wikipedia birth name, Christopher John Boyle. Chris Cornell sounds like a real name.
Yeah.
Doesn't sound like a
stage name. That's kind of like that that character in the Hawaii Five-O that was played by Woe Fat. Or was Woe Fat the character? Do you know what I'm talking about? Are you too young?
I'm familiar with Hawaii Five-O, but not enough to like know the characters' names or anything.
There was a character. There was a character. I got to look it up now. There was a character that every comic made fun of, because in the credits it was you would see it.
Like Dirk Stemrod or one of those really like fake sounding.
Yeah, it really stood out. Woe Fat was played by actor Kai Dai.
Ah,
so
and that was his real name.
That was his real name was Kai Dai, and he played Woe Fat.
Sure.
Huh. So it the big joke was, why would you bother? why not just use your real name? Why would you bother? And that's what it reminds me of with Chris Cornell. It's your name's Chris Boyle. Why?
That's a cool name.
Yeah, it's a cool name. Why Cornell?
But Cornell's not like Chris Steele or something like that. You know, it doesn't have that kind of a hokey. You know, it's like it's a regular.
It's got
name.
An Ivy League connection, doesn't it?
I don't know that that's what he was going for. I don't know if the grunge guitarist from Seattle was shooting for.
I don't know. There was always an aspiration to an intellectualism in the grunge.
That's true.
So maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
That's,
maybe.
No, and he was. I always say Chris Cornell, notably, I feel like he had the voice that all the bad grunge guys wanted to have.
Yes. Yes. Like, his voice spawned 1,000 awful bands.
Yes. Even like the herd.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all the, you know, all the comedy routines now. Nobody talks like that. Nobody does that. Nobody talks like that. It's like, well, he that was him. He originated it. What it kind of reminds me of is Jerry Seinfeld.
Absolutely.
Jerry Seinfeld seems hack, but the reason is not. It's not his fault. It's when he started doing. Have you ever noticed? And what's the deal with when he started that? No one else was doing that. That was Jerry Seinfeld. That was purely original. But it spawned a million bad comics, and
he's been like subsumed into the body of comedy,
right?
Like, he's like, I am become comedy or something like that. Like, yeah, like, comedy just absorbs Jerry Seinfeld so thoroughly that, now it's like, oh, yeah, people have been doing that forever. Well, not forever. Actually, he started in about 1976.
It's I'm gonna stroke my own horn here. I don't know if that's the proper euphemism, but it's out there. I got in an argument with some young kids, with some of the younger comics, and one of them said, "You're so hack. You know, my God, a Halloween tax routine, that is so old." It's like, well, yeah, you're right. It is old, but it was brand new when I came up with it, and then they started laughing at me. They're going to say, "Oh yeah, you were the first one to do that." yeah, I was.
Literally, I wrote that.
so it's I can only imagine what it must feel like to be Jerry, or Chris Cornell, which maybe, you know, maybe he was, maybe, you know, he turned on the radio and heard Nickelback and said, "Oh God, what did I do?"
Yeah, that's what it became, right? Over several years, like, the attempt at being Chris Cornell just became Nickelback, kind of thing. But his voice, his voice had like a shocking clarity to it. It was, you know, it's unfortunate that it's, well, I don't think it is. People certainly recognize him as being very good, but like, you know, the bad version of him is something that everybody can do, and the good version of him is something that almost nobody can do.
Yeah.
Yeah, incredible voice. You know, one of the kind of five founding grunge bands, I would say. You know, Pearl Jam, or the Seattle bands. You know, you have Pearl Jam, Nirvana, Soundgarden.
Okay, it's the three founding grunge bands.
Yeah, there's a couple I'm leaving out because he's all those guys are dead now. All those lead singers, Jane's Addiction, are they L.A.? But yeah, everybody's, Alice in Chains, was a big one too. And, you know, dead. Eddie Vedder is the last man standing.
It's kind of interesting. I remember back in the '90s, I was talking to some kids and I was talking about their grunge thing. And I said, it was almost prophetic. I said, you know, I said, these grunge kids are going to have to start killing themselves off. Otherwise, they're gonna seem as whiny as Morrissey.
yeah. There's a certain "screw you, Dad" that just doesn't wear well into your 30s and 40s.
Right. And if you're that angry and you're that depressed and everything, I mean, that's what you do. It sounds dark and bleak, but you know,
Yeah.
Bruce Springsteen can no longer sing about trying to get up the money for a brake job on a Chevy.
Right, exactly.
He can't.
So I told my driver to pull around. But, you know, interestingly, Cornell, so obviously, sadly, Cornell, for those who don't know, took his own life. His wife seems to think it had to do with him taking too many Ativan that he'd been prescribed, which is to put him in a, you know, bad frame of mind. Possible.
Well, here's a little hint for any rock stars that wanna kill themselves. Don't hang yourself, because there seems to be a necessity when a rock star hangs himself. There is a necessity to say his pants were on and secured.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Because that is the first thing. I think Robin Williams' wife actually made a point of that.
Wow.
I could be wrong, but I think I saw that.
Well, you know, the carotene is the thought.
Yeah, or the Michael Hutchins.
Yeah.
So it's not. Yeah.
You know what? What I always think about is what interesting is that suicide rates for men to have two big spikes. If a guy is going to kill himself, statistically, he's going to do it when he's like, what, 16 to 21, you know, whatever, that kind of that younger, uh-huh, you know, range. And then the odds drop really low. I mean, you know, relatively, they're quite low. And then but I think it's between like, and I'm getting the numbers slightly off, but it's basically like 48 to 52-ish, that range. They go way up. Like, if you look at news reports of guys killing themselves, it's usually in that range.
Huh.
And so part of me wonders if Cornell was part of that sort of weird. Because I think if you're a guy who's like an atheist, or agnostic-ish, you don't have any big belief system holding you up. You've been around the block. You've done everything you should do. I could see 55 as a, you've got plenty of time left, but maybe you're done with the ride.
Yeah, but that's all you have left is the time. That's pretty much if you haven't assembled something by the time you're 55, the odds of you assembling it are slim to none.
Now, of course, obviously, Chris Cornell had assembled much.
Exactly.
That's what's so surprising.
Right.
About that.
I would understand. You know, the guy that comes home from the factory, maybe got a layoff notice. Comes back, like George Bailey looks at his travel brochures from when he was in his that he collected in his 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And realizes that none of those trips are going to occur. I can see that, but someone is rich in life experience as Chris Cornell. You would not think that he would be depressed, but.
Oh, it is, of course, that's the thing. You never know. And of course, maybe it was a weird bad drug combo thing. Maybe from our perspective, how could you imagine? And then from his perspective, he's been a rock star for so long that it probably doesn't feel like a whole lot.
No,
that
is true. It's
been effectively a famous rock star since you were 23.
Right.
It's 30 years of that, you go, I'm done. but hopefully, R.I.P. Chris Cornell, awesome singer, and shall be missed, and we shall not be missed because we'll be back in the next second.
On the rule of three with the final segment. The news today, scanning through, looking for something to talk about other than the news. I'm tired of it. I'm sick and tired of it. That's all I have to say about that. But I ran across this. Clint Eastwood is in Cannes. They're actually doing a retrospective of his life, and he spoke at Cannes, and according to the Daily Mail, Hollywood legend Clint Eastwood has hit out at political correctness, claiming one of his greatest films could not have been produced in today's climate. The 86-year-old regaled the Cannes Film Festival, also predicted a possible return to acting, and decried what he perceives to be the world's collective loss of a sense of humor.
I find the irony of that so astonishingly rich.
and he goes on to say that he doesn't believe, and a lot of people say this, Mel Brooks says it about Blazing Saddles, but I never really thought about this. He said that he does not believe that Dirty Harry could be produced today.
I don't know. I mean, it would be different. Was that the movie he was referring to?
Well, no, he actually said
when he said the movie is his that he couldn't be made today. What was the movie he was referring to?
Yeah, it's here's the quote. A lot of people thought it was politically incorrect. Eastwood said of Dirty Harry, that was at the beginning of the era we're in now, where everybody thinks everyone's politically correct. We're killing ourselves by doing that. We've lost our sense of humor.
Well, first off, Dirty Harry is an interesting movie because it's kind of a. It's kind of a satire, but also very much not. I would argue Eli Roth is doing the exact same thing. There's plenty of horror movie directors who are doing the same thing. That's all Green Inferno is. In terms of humor, I'm just going to read off some recent Clint Eastwood movies as a... Oh, that's actor. Let's find some directing. Let's find the real depressing ones that he's responsible for.
Okay.
American Sniper, J. Edgar, Hereafter, Changeling, Letters from Iwo Jima, Million Dollar Baby, Mystic River, Bloodwork, True Crime.
Okay.
He is the most depressing director in American cinema. And in fact, you can usually tell a good Clint Eastwood movie by the presence of any humor or none. There's some humor in Sully, a little bit. Sully's kind of an irascible fellow. I liked Sully. Because Eastwood is a great director. American Sniper, not one joke. Hereafter is possibly, I would say Hereafter, Changeling, and Million Dollar Baby would be the trilogy of some of the three of the most humorless movies of all time that have put, if you played those three movies back to back, everyone in the room would be dead by their own hand before the final reel.
Sure, but maybe, no maybe that's just Clint recognizing what the market wants.
Hereafter is bad.
Well, you know, now that I think about it, his only attempt at raucous comedy is still mocked as possibly one of the worst films ever.
Every Which Way But Loose?
I think that's the one. I think that's the one with the monkey.
Yeah. Yes, or the sequel, Any Which Way You Can.
Yeah, that was in the era. That was in the Smokey and the Bandit era when.
Yep, I maybe the best name for a sequel ever. By the way, I really like just the name "Any Which Way You Can" as a sequel to a movie "Every Which Way But Loose." It's actually way more inspired than anything else in the movie.
But Dirty Harry does have a sense of humor. It's a very dark sense of humor. And if it did not have a sense of humor, it would not have inspired. We're talking about the inspiration of millions. It would not have inspired millions of bad impressions.
Absolutely.
That "Do You Feel Lucky" monologue is probably one of the most famous monologues in any film ever. And interestingly, I just found this out. I might have known it and forgotten it, but originally, Dirty Harry was written as a vehicle for John Wayne. Did you?
Oh, that makes sense.
And it's really funny if you think about it, because you can do a John Wayne impression to that monologue.
It's the first thing that popped into my mind. Do you feel lucky, punk? You know?
Well, really? To be honest with you, I kind of lost count myself.
Yeah, he would have been much more kind of doddering. It would have been doddery Harry. But Dirty Harry is also a great example of one of those things that kind of started as a half-serious, half-joke and just totally evolved out of the joke. It absolutely became a very straight-faced version of what it was.
Well, what it was a Western set in New York or San Francisco? I can't remember.
San Francisco, or at least the first one.
Yeah, it was essentially a modern Western. I mean, it had all the elements, you know, right down to that final scene, which is just like a classic shootout. And that's what it was. It was an updated Western, which is why they wanted John Wayne. And John Wayne looked at the script and said it was ridiculous. So they got Clint Eastwood, who was at the time was a Western star as well, was an unknown actually at the time. It was, you know, what was meant, what probably would have been one of the last great films that John Wayne made, he turned down, and what it did, a declining star handed it off to a rising star.
Clint had been in a ton of other stuff before that.
But he was kind of a B actor. He was not a...
Well, he'd already been in Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Right.
Great...
Weren't those spaghetti westerns?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it
is. Yeah,
that's
but those were, very, I mean, those were very well regarded.
Oh, gosh, no. But he was like a cult, he was a cult hero. His Dirty Harry was his mainstream breakout. It was not not everybody watched those spaghetti westerns. It's
yeah, I guess you're. I'm looking back. I mean, he was definitely a
in retrospect, everyone does. Yeah. I mean, because they're
yeah, that's interesting.
When they came out in the theaters, I mean, those were the things that ran in the theaters that couldn't afford the new releases.
Yeah, probably the thing he'd done before he'd done Where Eagles Dare and Kelly's Heroes before that, which were probably two of his bigger American
right.
You know, bigger American breakouts. Because, yeah, High Plains Drifter wouldn't come out for a while. And some, you know, the Westerns he directed, which I'm a big fan of.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, Clint Eastwood, some of his movies, I find him very frustrating and interesting as a guy. And I find him very frustrating and interesting as a director. Because he has some of the worst movies ever made. Not the worst movies ever made. I don't know. Hereafter is one of the worst movies of the decade.
I don't think I saw that. Man, what's that about?
Oh, it's about a bunch of sad people who get caught in a tsunami and then their ghosts are talking to each other or something.
Matt Damon's in it. I did not see that.
It's bad. But he's also done some amazing, you know, I mean, some of my favorite movies too. And some really weird, you know, he's done some very weird movies that, like White Hunter Black Heart is a really interesting movie, which is basically about John Ford killing elephants while he's supposed to be making a movie. A Perfect World is a really interesting movie with Kevin Costner. You know, he's got a lot of great stuff, but
wow, I have not seen nearly the amount of Clint Eastwood films as you have.
I've seen just about all of them, but they ain't none of them funny. Let me tell you.
Oh, come on, monkeys are always funny.
I'm a believer that monkeys are never funny. God, I hate monkeys so much.
Really?
Oh yeah, I hate monkeys. Just never go see them in the zoo. Just not a fan. Too much like people, not enough like
did
people.
Did you know that is the biggest fear of a clown? People fear clowns, but do you know what clowns fear?
Monkeys.
Chimpanzees specifically, yes.
Yeah, because the chimpanzees don't like the clown's makeup, right? It freaks them out.
Yeah.
I think it does. The chimps don't freak out on the clowns.
Yeah, yeah, but they don't, you know, it's exactly. Which means that fear of clowns goes deep into the human genome.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Oh,
but the monkeys, yeah, the chimpanzees don't know how to deal with it. Where the rest of us said, you know, we'll just say, "Mom, can you take that clown out of my room?" You know, it's chimpanzees react in a much different.
Yeah, they eat your face.
A much different.
Ooh, so the fashion. Scariest thing in the world would be a monkey clown.
But. Anyway, so that's I thought this might actually start something where we don't have time for, but I thought Clint Eastwood was funny in his speech at the convention of 2012.
Oh, the chair speech.
The chair, I thought that was funny.
That's one of the dumbest things I've ever seen. It was so dumb. It was so stupid. I'm going to pretend you're in a chair. Just do it like an open letter, man. Why do you need the chair there? That was bad. The optics of that were bad.
Well,
it was bad.
I think that the reception of that one totally depended on which side of the aisle you were on. Is that why it was funny to me was up until that point, very few people had made fun of Barack Obama. He was so lightly treated through comedy that when Clint Eastwood came out and did that, it seemed funnier than it actually was. I'll put that on it, that restriction on it, because it had not been done. It had seemed completely politically incorrect. It seemed completely out of place, and it seems that we're out of time.
Is the opposite of politically incorrect correct hilarity? Because I don't think that's – I think that's bad math.
Could be. But we have no time. We're out of it. That's the show for today, ladies and gentlemen. If you like the show, please subscribe to us on iTunes. Also, you know, we're gonna put out a request here. We want to hear some comments. We know we've got some faithful followers. Put some comments on there too. Let us know what you think, what you like, what you don't like. Maybe we can change the show in a fashion that might be more appealing to you. We want to hear some feedback.
As long as it fits into 3 10-minute segments.
Maybe you don't like that. Maybe we'll have to make the rule of three a title for something that we don't even do anymore. I don't know. Let us know. TimSlegel.com episodes there. Also, iTunes, Facebook page coming soon.
Yep, and BrianMillerComedy.com and at RealBrianMiller with a Y on Twitter.
See you next week.
See you next week.